All right, if I can have your attention back towards the front, appreciate that. Thanks. I want to start today with a quiz. Kind of see how easy or difficult it might be for you to complete these statements. If I start with a statement, see if you can shout out to finish it. I'm at the end of my... I feel like I'm coming. My life is falling. I'm at my wits. I'm so stressed. My boss, my spouse, my kids are driving me. Why was that so easy for you all? You know, the truth is that most of us are living faster and faster lives. That there's something intoxicating that becomes about speed, isn't it? For those with kids and grandkids, you put them on a merry-go-round or something that's moving and they'll say, faster, faster, faster. That same child gets to 17 and gets a license and gets a car and says, faster, faster. I want to use this photo of a speedometer, which kind of metaphorically helps us to think about the speed of our lives. You know, from the time of Caesar until about the time of Napoleon, about 1800 years, the top speed at which people could do life was essentially about the same, metaphorically speaking. And we'll call it, just for our sake, 5 kilometres per hour. The speed in which people and goods and information would travel. And for about 1800 years, the top speed of life was the pace of a swift horse or a good boat in a strong wind. And so for 1800 years, people's lives kind of traveled along at about 5 kilometres per hour. But at the beginning of the 1700s, a flurry of changes started speeding up our lives. Improvements in upholstery allowed stagecoaches to pick up speed. In the early 1800s, railroads, steamships started dramatically increasing the speed of transportation to as much as 40 kilometres per hour. In 1898, there were fewer than 30 automobiles on the road in the US, but a decade later there were over 700 factories producing cars, and the pace of life would never be the same. In 1937, Dale Carnegie published the bestseller How to Win Friends and Influence People, which gave us tips on how to manufacture friends in a hurry. In the 1950s, we were introduced to the TV dinner. In the 1960s, people started saving time with household chores, with time-saving devices like dishwashers. But we began to be driving more and working longer hours. In 1973, express delivery services begin, so they can quicken the pace at which business gets done as documents could be delivered overnight. And by the 1980s, it became like a slow-moving turtle, when you can immediately send a document by fax over the phone line. And then in the 90s, widespread use of email and electronic communication started making the walk down to the halls of the fax machine sound like a criminal waste of time. And who of us could have ever imagined how our lives would change when smartphones hit our lives in 2008? Where we can access emails and calendars and phone and contacts and social media and video games and YouTube and Wordle at our fingertips anytime, anywhere, because when we need our fix, we need it bad. You see, for 1800 years, human beings were kind of moving along at about 5 kilometers per hour. But over the last 200 years, the pace of life has got so fast that it's got faster and faster and faster, where today people are going more like 200 kilometers per hour. And we've bought a boatload of technological advanced time-saving devices that were supposed to make our life easier. And almost every study shows that the average worker is working longer hours, taking fewer days off, and shorter holidays, and the convenience of being able to work anywhere, anytime, has turned into everywhere, all the time. Like you never leave work. In a study I read only this week, nearly 60% of the population describes themselves as being burnt out. The pressure is for us to run faster and faster and faster, and it keeps increasing. Everything becomes urgent, and we can't keep up. We suffer from hurry sickness. And even when we lie down at night, our minds don't rest. You know, out of his own frustration, Solomon wrote thousands of years ago, what do people do? What do people get in this life for all their hard work and anxiety? Their days of labor are filled with pain and grief, and even at night, their minds cannot rest. It is all meaningless. How many of us, even when we try to relax, we can't shut down? Our minds are so filled with endless to-do lists, and our souls rarely find deep rest. And I know what I'm talking about, because it's often me. And hurry sickness has become one of the most toxic influences that harms our spiritual well-being. Let me share three observations. I probably don't need to tell you this, but when you and I live this way, I discovered we miss out. Because moving at the speed of life, we just miss out on moments. Moments in the here and now, because our eyes are turned to what is coming way out in front of us, we miss out on what is going on around us. And we often have one eye on the past and one eye way out in the future, and we're comparing our life with everybody else right in front of us. We miss the present. We miss the gift that is right here in the moment. I love this simple verse from the Christmas story. After Jesus had been born in the stable and the shepherds had come to visit, it simply says, "But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart." But I think that's wonderful. He says, "I'm not going to miss out on the moment. I'm not going to get stressed out about the circumstances that she was finding herself in." She was not thinking about what the next move would be here with her new family. She just treasured the moment. You just pondered, you just soaked in the moment. And that is so good for our souls. Why don't we do that more often? Because we're moving way too fast. Well, Mark Cromer puts it this way. He says, hurry is violence on the soul. Hurry can be a soul wrecker and a family wrecker, as we can so overschedule, moving so fast, doing so many activities that we miss out on the moments, with our kids being constantly shuttled to an adult plan of highly structured activities, that sometimes they actually miss out on being a kid. Structure and fun can sometimes be opposites for a kid. Again, Solomon reflected when he said, then I observed that most people are motivated to success because they envy their neighbors. But this too is meaningless, like chasing the wind, he says. You see, because everybody else is running fast, we sometimes think that we have to, or our kids will fall behind. And we get driven by this unhealthy competitive spirit, living at such a fast pace that we turn our children into high achievers but not allow them just to be kids. So much so that they don't know what to do with unstructured free time. And so if you fast forward into being adults, so that these free times seem strange, and so they get then passed on to their kids. And so the cycle keeps going. We keep passing on our hurry sickness. The theologian and philosopher Soren Kierkegaard once wrote, the press of busyness is like a charm. Its power swells. It reaches out, seeking always to lay hold of ever younger victims, so that childhood or youth are scarcely allowed the quiet and the retirement in which the eternal may unfold a divine growth. You see, we move so fast as families and in the workplace that we miss out on hearing the small, still small voice of God, because we never get the chance to develop the internal inside of us. Our children might develop skills. They might stimulate their intellects. They might train their bodies. They may win a trophy. But how do we develop their soul so it's real to them? Not only do we miss out, but we also pass by. You see, we get moving so fast that we can't see the opportunities that are around us to do good and to serve one another. And when we do see them, they're on our peripheral vision, along with a million other things. And we get moving so fast that our time becomes more important than people. In the parable that Jesus told of the Good Samaritan, we read, of course, how the religious leaders coming back from church in Jerusalem on their way back to Jericho, who see the man on the side of the road has been beaten up. And their minds are probably on a number of things. And we're told that they passed by on the other side. And as they passed by, they missed out on the blessings of being used of God. John Ortberg writes, we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. That doesn't mean that we'll never be busy. There's a difference. Jesus often had a lot to do, but he never did it in a way that severed life-giving connection between him and the Father. He never did it in a way that interfered with his ability to give love when love was called for. He never did it in a way that caused him to treat someone as an interruption. Jesus was often busy, but never hurried. You see, the problem with hurry is that hurry isn't just a disordered schedule. It's a disordered heart. And when you have a disordered heart, you have a diminished capacity to love. Because love and hurry are often incompatible. Because love always takes time. And the one thing that hurried people don't have is time. But moving at the speed of life, we miss out and we pass by and eventually we crash into. Because the research shows that the number one killer in the West is stress. So how well are you sleeping these days? Because having the right amount of sleep is one of the predictors of good health and happiness. Yet nearly half of the population suffers from some kind of sleep-related problem. And one in six suffers from chronic insomnia. But the problem is the way we live our lives when we're awake. What do we need to do? How can we cure our hurry sickness and find rest for our souls? Instead of missing out, instead of passing by, instead of crashing. Well, the first thing we need to do is to pull over. I almost wrote slow down, but I think it's pull over. I know from my own experience, it has to be something more radical than that. Because when you're hurry sick, you just can't slow up a bit and stay there. You've got to pull over and stop. And I know that sometimes circumstances increase the complexities of life for us. There are some things we can do. We can adjust the place we live. We can adjust our pace to where we live. But I've learned that pace is what you make it. It's based on the decisions that you make. You can take your body and you can physically move it to a slower location. But your hurried soul goes with you. I know from my years of ministry that my busiest and most hurried periods aren't necessarily when I've been ministering in my biggest roles and the larger churches. In my earlier days in the smaller churches, when I had a young family, I was saying yes to too many things. I was always available. I had my foot on the accelerator, trying to help everybody, reach everybody, please everybody. My pace was out of control and my soul was shriveling. You see, your pace hasn't got so much to do with your external environment as it does with your internal one. Because pace flows from a restless soul. Again, I know the circumstances of life can bring and throw things at us and put us into a tailspin at times. I may not be able to choose caring for a sick child or an elderly parent. I may not be able to choose unexpected bills that come in, or to choose my commute, crazy traffic. But I can choose peace. And I can choose joy. And I can choose to slow down my heart and my mind and my body and my soul. Where can we find rest for our souls? From my own experience of someone who suffered from hurry sickness, there's only one place that I found such rest, and that's in God Himself. David puts it this way in the psalm when he says, "Truly my soul finds rest in God. My salvation comes from Him. Truly He is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I'll never be shaken." You know, things like holidays and having a dream home and more money and so forth may provide temporary relief, but they can't substitute for the rest that my soul craves that only comes from God. I like the way that Augustine says it in his famous prayer. He says, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you." You know, God knows us inside and out, and He knows the restlessness we feel. And our culture has become so addicted to a hurry pace, especially to our smartphones. We're constantly checking in social media. We can literally be slaves to a pace and stress and worry and addicted approval seeking of other people's expectations. And we sometimes dismiss it by saying, "Well, that's the way things work in our culture." For those of us that have been in other cultures, we see it's a very different experience. We mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when Paul said to Jesus' followers, when they lived in a hurried and sick culture, and Ron quoted it earlier again today, "Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold." Don't let the world or the pace of the world determine your pace. But let the Holy Spirit do what He wants to develop in us. In things like love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and gentleness and faithfulness and self-control. Let Him set our pace. Let Him make up our schedule. Let Him determine our priorities. Because if you do, He will remind us throughout the day just to chill, to relax in the truth of who you are as a much loved person who is already significant. That you don't have to run hard to try and prove yourself. But we need to be intentional about this. Pull over. Turn off the motor. Shut out the noise. And ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your lives. I know my own experience. One of the things I try to do each year is put in four what I call spiritual retreat days. And I try and get away from all the noise and buzz around me. And I can find places where I can get rid of the physical noises, but there's the noises in my head still. When we lived out in the desert, I'd go out in the desert or out into the bush, or these days down along Seven Mile Beach, and take only my Bible and a journal and a pen. And it takes me 2 or 3 hours to try to get rid of the clutter before I can actually be still enough to maybe hear God. And that's where the big decisions in life are made. But it's only not 4 times a year. Each day I'll go for a walk. And going a walk, just trying to look around me and observe what's God doing around this place. Sometimes I'll even do it every hour. I'll get up and walk for 5 or 10 minutes to clear my mind, to get rid of all the stuff that I'm focusing on, so that I can be in a place and a space to hear God and experience him in the midst of all the hurriedness that's going around. And it allows God to break through the day. And so there are times when I will turn off my phone, and there are times when I will not be answering emails. Because sometimes, even though I'm an extroverted type of personality, I need solitude sometimes to be able to listen to God. And as Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Jesus says, I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. My yoke is easier, my burden is light. So pull over. Stop. And the second thing you've got to do is to open the hood. Pull over. Open the hood. You see, we are drawn to hurry because hurry makes us feel like we're important and keeps the adrenaline going. It keeps us from seeing things as they really are. But if we're going to live with healthy souls, if you're going to be a healthy you, then you've got to examine the reality of your life with fearful honesty. You need to look at yourself and look closely at your own soul. You need to pull over and open the hood. And come to God in the quiet and say, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Take me to the root of my hurry sickness. Is it my pride? Is it my insecurity? Is it envy? Is it discontentment? Is it a lack of gratitude? Is it fear? God, point out to me what makes me idle so fast. What's contributing to all the noise in my life? What am I chasing? What am I running from? Is all the stuff I'm accumulating really making my life better? Why can't I sleep? Why can't I say no? Am I addicted to approval? Why do I have this drive to always be first? What part does perfectionism play in my life? Why, when Jesus says, come to me, why don't I? You have to pull over. You have to open the hood and say, search me, O God. Because if you want to stop missing out, if you want to stop passing by, then you have to pull over and open the hood. And the last thing is this. You need to change lanes. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes. You see, if you just take a little break and make some small changes and leave it at that, when we walk away, we go straight back to the same old pace. And we never actually pull over, and we never get around to actually opening the hood and getting God involved. And we just continue to live with a frazzled mind and a restless soul. Of course, you know the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over and over again and think you're going to get a different result. So if you and I are going to detox from hurry sickness, We have to start doing things differently. We need to change lanes. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes. We've got to be intentional about it. And we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. Because it's toxic. Maybe you can start with some small things. Maybe let some other people get in front of the line, in front of you. Maybe instead of racing to get through the door first, you could get there and open it and let others in. Maybe you could take time to express gratitude and become a thankful person, because it can reduce all kinds of things in your life, such as greed and envy and entitlement and cynicism and hurry from your soul. If you want to rediscover the rhythms of grace and joy and peace and contentment, then start counting the blessings and the gifts that God is giving you. Make a gratitude list every day. One of our children does that with our grandchildren. They have a meal every night together around the table, which is not all that common these days. But they go around and every person in the room has to say what they are thankful for today. See, it's only when you take time to rest that you can see God and what He's doing and what He's saying. And that happens corporately as well. Because, friends, that's what we've been doing with the church for the last year and a bit. You see, for 12 months with the transition team, we stopped. We rested. In fact, the first series messages when I first came here, which Sam had already organized, was about resting in God. It's not coincidental. We stopped and we looked under the hood. We examined ourselves. We took the time to do that. And then we started to make some changes. And we're now shifting lanes. As David says, "Let my soul be at rest again, for the Lord has been good to me. He has saved me from death, my eyes from tears, my feet from stumbling, and so I walk in the Lord's presence as I live here on earth." Just pull over. Just lift the hood and change lanes. You know, it's been in those difficult and those challenging times that I've occasionally had in ministry that I've learnt to recall the words of the psalmist when he says, "Be still. Be still and know that I am God." From time to time, I know that I need to hear God say again, "Stop running so hard and fast. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that you are loved." God does not want us to be all revved up in the inside. By His love, by His power, by His presence, that we can all live a productive difference, making life, even if it's a busy life, but we can make it a non-hurried life and still find rest for our soul. And then from the very mouth of Jesus, He says, are you tired, worn out, burnt out on religion? Come to me, he says. Get away from me and you will recover your life. I'll show you how to make a real rest. Walk with me. Work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, says Jesus, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Why don't we accept the invitation? Why don't you pray with me? Father, we acknowledge that many of us are suffering from hurry sickness. We just get caught up in the pace of our culture. We keep chasing stuff and fame. We chase approval and performance, trying to be first, trying to climb. God, I pray that we will hear you say to us to be still and know that you are God and know that we are loved, that you call us to come to you who are weary and who are heavy burdened, and that you will give us rest. Father, I pray that every one of us here today will find rest for our soul in a relationship with you. And I pray this in Jesus' name as the Prince of Peace. Amen.